Welcome everybody, my name is Krush AK and this is the Market Meditations Podcast. We chat with fascinating people from around the world to extract mindsets, routines, stories and habits to help you build richer lives. Hello everybody, I have with me today Z, better known as Crypto Nikos, a man who's managed to do something quite incredible. He's not just an incredible businessman, trader and investor, but he's actually managed to sync up making money with all of his passions, from buying and selling Pokemon cards to owning his own esports team. You're really going to enjoy this episode, so without further ado, let's get into this. Yo, guys, it is a Saturday. It is 7 o'clock. I've been working since 5 o'clock, looking forward to Z joining me on this podcast today. How are you doing, Z?
What's going on, buddy? Doing good. It's a beautiful Saturday. You know, just woke up. No complaints. Life is good.
Damn, so first thing in the morning, you're hopping on a podcast on a Saturday.
Just for you, my man. Just for you. Special.
Do you normally work on Saturdays?
I do. I work on both Saturdays and Sundays. I think, you know, you're in crypto, you know how the space is, never really stops. So yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been working weekends or 7 days a week really?
Honestly, I've always worked, weekends and 7 days a week. I've worked, weekends since I was 15, really. I used to teach tennis lessons since I was 15 and string tennis rackets back in the day and flip sneakers and do all this stuff. So right. I was never really a stranger to working weekends. It kind of just carried on.
Why was that? Was it, did you need the money or did you just love the hustle or both even?
It was both. So like, you know, growing up needed the money, just for things that I want to do. Tennis racket string was really good. You know, when you're 15 years old and you're getting paid like 15 bucks, in about 45 minutes of work, it's pretty good. You know, when you're 15, I mean, it's a lot of money. So, yeah, I mean, that was just kind of the mindset that I always had. And, that just kind of carried on.
Who instilled that into you? Like,
I think it was more on the lines of, so my family, so first off, my dad and my mom do a lot of business. They do like pretty large business, mining operations in Mexico. And for myself, I grew up playing competitive tennis since the age of 7. I went to sports academy and so forth. So I think that sort of mindset, that sort of training, that sort of discipline and drive taught me, I guess, the building blocks of being an entrepreneur.
That's insane. I knew a little bit about your competitive tennis. I mean, I guess that's the foundation to your personality, really, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of people who know me for a long time, you can definitely know that I'm a very intense person. I'm always go, go, go. I've two modes. I have 0 or 100 every single time. You know, so if I'm going to do something, I'm going to go 120% essentially to every single venture that I do. But yeah, I just have two modes. And then, you know, when I'm shutting off, I shut off.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. What are you doing right now? Could we get a bit of an introduction as to what's going on in Z's life right now?
Yeah. So, you know, right now, I guess you would say that I'm a serial investor, entrepreneur, fintech investor, mogul, whatever you want to call it. Right? I don't pretend to, you know, lavish myself too much. But what I do is that I have two funds. I have a standard, I guess your standard basic VC fund that would invest into projects on a more structure based, as well as trade and you know, diversify assets. And then on top of it, I also have my own fund with my buddies. And that one is sort of my baby. These guys that I grew up with since I was 16 years old that have invested in me in the sneaker game when I was younger. These kind of guys, they've invested in me throughout life. And, you know, in 2017, we did very well with the crypto market and a few other ventures as well. And that's like my fund that I primarily trade as well as invest for. And that one acts as a very similar to a family office. So there's a little bit less restrictions. I don't really report to anybody on that one. And I just, you know, invest how I see fit and trade how I see fit.
That's awesome. I'd love to hear about both of those. So why are they separate? Why don't you just run one big fund?
So the reason why they're separate is because these guys that have invested into me for a long time, we have a very, very strange relationship. It's sort of it's grown so close, I guess, a trust factor between us that they don't want to impede the way I invest. And I also don't want to impede the way some of their investments are. So we don't talk about, our investments per se with each other. We just make the money. It's all transparent, and there's a lot of love and trust for each other. These guys are like guys that I would be their godfather to their kids. That's the kind of level that we're in.
That's insane.
Yeah.
So childhood friends that bonds just helped through.
Yeah, and these guys are very, very successful guys. You know, two of them are lawyers, you know, got like top level accounts, doctor. Yeah.
It's insane that you can, I don't maintain that level of trust when money and business gets involved as well. It's really impressive because personally, I have had incidents in the past where people I thought were friends have cut hard, and money makes that happen.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Are there any fail-safes or drawbacks to working with friends like that? By fail-safes, I mean stuff you have to put in place to make sure it stays legit or no one does anything to anyone, or is the trust so solid that there's even no word of it mentioned? You just do what you do.
I mean, in terms of investments, I do what I do. Now, obviously, they have trust in me knowing that I'm not going to, you know, be stupid with the money and essentially invest 100% of it into, you know, some random shitcoin or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we have a corporation. It's set a certain way. And but besides that, it's been mainly trust. And I think that's what's actually the successful factor to it. I think there is a lot of there's definitely exactly what you said, right? I've definitely struggled with that, mixing business with friendship, and that has struggled for me. But in this particular case, because we've been doing so many investments, so many hustles, I guess you would say, over the course of now 15 years, the bond is second to none. I mean, these guys, yeah, like it's one of those situations where, you know, if these guys needed 100,000 next day, I'm wiring it to them and there's no questions asked. Yeah. We'll talk about it later.
I love that. That's insane. You said there are times where it's gone wrong though. Would you be comfortable sharing a time where it's gone wrong?
Yeah, I mean, and not necessarily on, so it's been wrong on other businesses, not this business.
Yeah.
But like before, you know, I've always been a serial entrepreneur. I've had a coffee company, I've had a apparel company, I've had pretty much the company. And there's been times where, you know, I really thought that friends and very close friends of mine too that could do the work essentially, could actually do it and put the time in, and it just failed out. The coffee company was a big one for me. We got really, really close to we produced the product. We got really, really close to distributing the product. And the one individual that is my good friend still, very, very good friend, love him. He unfortunately didn't have the time, as well as he didn't have the just the mental capacity at that time.
Mm-hmm.
As we were younger, we were like 22 years old, fresh out of college, and he just didn't have the capacity at that time to do what he said he could do. And unfortunately, you know, it just turned out to be a little bit ugly because there was a lot of money at that time that was invested. I think I invested like close to $20,000, and some other partners did too, and it was just a lot at that time for us. You know, as we're 22.
How do you come out on top of that stronger? I mean, personally, when it happened to me, my worldview kind of changed because it was a deep cut from a friend and it was hard to trust again. Personally, how I handled it was I decided I'd rather live in a world where I do trust people and occasionally get hurt while taking the necessary precautions. But it's kind of a horrible world when you can't really trust people just because of one random incident. So how did you bounce back from that? How did you come out stronger?
So it's one of those things where you really have to learn from your mistakes. Absolutely what you said. Right, you have to learn from what you did wrong, why you did it wrong, and definitely make the necessary changes so in the future, if you do work with friends, you're not falling into that issue. But at the same time, what you said, Riss, now about trust factor is a very important thing because I believe, at least for me, I believe that you have to approach a business exactly like a relationship in a certain sense. Trust is an absolute baseline factor. And if I cannot trust my partners, even if they're super decorated, even if it's like a Mark Cuban or whatnot, top of line billionaire, I still will not be in business. I've actually turned down business with a couple guys in Asia that were billionaires. And I just straight up said, you know what, this is not for me. You know, your everyday life is just not, doesn't really fluctuate, doesn't really flow with the way I do stuff. I'm not going to do this deal. And I've turned away a lot of money.
Dude, I
love that you said that. I have a very, very similar philosophy, which it's kind of in a different way almost. It's not, I've had people who are wondering why I want to work with them. They're like, dude, they're way more qualified people that would love to take this opportunity to work with you. And I'm like, yo, but I can't trust them. If I cannot trust them, it doesn't matter how qualified they are. It doesn't matter that they could potentially make a bit more money. So yeah, dude, 100% with you on that. Trust is everything. And that would lead me on to this question. I know we've spoken about doing work together quite recently. What made you make me pass the test, for example? How did you look at me and say, oh, this guy passed the trust test, I want to work with him, rather than the billionaire where you're like, oh, I don't want to work with him?
So it's your image, right? The main thing is that I've, you know, we've followed each other for a while now. I followed you for quite a bit of time now, I think over a year now. And I constantly see the consistent outpour of content that you produce, the ridiculous amounts of free content that you produce, and just the images and the overall tweets that you send out, what you try to produce, what you try to give out to your community. You genuinely care about your community and you can feel those kind of things. So it would be a fool for me to not at least give it a chance. That's like how at least, you know, we get into to the moment of even getting into getting going. And then from there, you know, it builds out. But seeing that at least makes me feel confident that, hey, you know what, that's somebody I can trust. That's somebody I want to do business with. Let's talk further and let's see whether it can work out. And if it works out, fantastic, you know. But I would be a fool not to at least take that leap because of prior issues that I dealt with personally on somebody completely different.
Well, I hope our listeners can take away at least a lesson I truly think is valuable, which is trust. I mean, value trust over almost anything when it comes to business, because if you don't have that in place, it's almost guaranteed to go wrong at some point. It's just this binary thing which needs to be done every time, zero or one, either like you were talking about earlier, either 100% or zero. This is one of those instances. And speaking of Twitter, I've been following you for a little while as well. Especially recently, I've been loving watching your hustle. The luxury markets you deal with, that's with your friend's son, right? And does that include the Pokemon cards?
The two partners I have are, one of them is JB, the Crypto King. He's involved. He's actually the buddy of mine that actually got me into Pokemon in general. You know, JB, what's it called? He is a very special individual. Just like trust, as we spoke about, he's actually a very trustworthy person. He's very much a ride or die for your friend kind of guy. And I've only known him since last year in Hong Kong in March. But when I met him, we just clicked, and he's just one of those guys where he's gotten to the point where like I would do anything for him and he would do anything for me, that kind of relationship. So we have him as the main guy. And then the second guy is Luke Wagman, who, if you guys aren't familiar with the, you know, audience, Luke is the guy who got the tattoo of CZ. He was the second hire for CoinMarketCap, and he was the one who got there's three guys, Gareth, Luke, and CZ, who got the Binance tattoo on their arm. So Luke, you know, Luke was instrumental for selling CoinMarketCap to Binance, and he's a good guy. It's just a homie.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's the Pokemon endeavor.
And so they just happened to know, like they had an edge, I guess, in the Pokemon card market. They knew what to buy, when, and how.
So 4 months ago, JB decided to start flipping Pokemon cards. The reason why he started doing that is because he actually came from the luxury watch market, and he actually did really, really well with luxury watches. So he took a stab at Pokemon as a summer project. Actually, this longer, so it's like 5 months ago. He took it as a summer project, and he ended up closing over 250 grand in profit in 3 months, selling Pokemon cards online, just buying and selling. And he, you know, created Instagram, and he realized that there is a niche for it because people sell Pokemon cards, but not everybody has the liquidity to be able to be the high-end guy. So he put himself in. He is now known as the high-end Pokemon guy because, you know, whereas guys buy and sell a few $1,000s worth of cards, maybe some of the newer cards, no one has a stack and an overall supply of the old cards because they're simply too expensive. You're talking about $5,000 plus a card. And So that's where JB came in play. You know, he has capital from crypto from before, and he was able to buy up the supply and really kind of make himself known as that guy. And every single margin is astronomical. You're talking about every single trade margin that we do. You're talking about, like, unless it's with like a good friend that I'm not going to like gouge, you're talking about a 40, 50, you know, maybe north 80% price, you know, difference between, you know, profit to gross, right?
These are multi-$1,000 cards.
Yeah, multi-$1,000 cards. So, just yesterday alone, you know, talking about clearing, you know, $100,000 days. So then
days, $100,000 Pokemon card days.
$100,000 Pokemon days. So yesterday, I think yesterday we closed about, closed about 290 grand. And then we walked away with about 100,000.
That is insane. The coolest hustle I've ever heard on this show.
So it's Pokemon cards. It's luxury watches. It's like a bespoke service. So you want gold, you know, we got you on gold. We got you on luxury cars. It's like a very high end guy thing. I'm actually in the process right now of launching the business out. I don't want to rush it. That's the thing. Because the thing about it is that, like, there's no reason for me to all of a sudden rush it out. And all of a sudden, I have a huge amount of pings from people who don't really have the capital, who just want to inquire, just to inquire. And it's a lot of customer service, you know, in terms of help, which is why, you know, for me, I've tweeted it here and there. I reach out to, you know, certain people that I know have the capital to want to buy. And I offer it, hey, man, you know, if you want to diversify your crypto, I accept crypto. I'll give you a card and you do what you want to do. You know, what you want to do is what you want to do in terms of reporting, like all that good stuff, right?
Do you have like regular clients or is it a lot of different clients with this sort of market?
No, I have some regular clients and some very, very big ones. So, you know, one of my clients that buys regularly from us is actually Gary Vee. So Gary Vee buys cards from us pretty often. He's bought a lot of cards from us.
That's insane. Have you met Gary Vee?
I have not met Gary Vee, but what's it called? Jake is in talks with Gary as well as I'm not sure what you saw recently, but yesterday Logan Paul tweeted that he bought a couple of Pokemon cards. So Logan actually bought those Pokemon cards from us.
I missed that, but that is also insane. I'm going to check that out. That mm-hmm. is incredible. So like high level, I mean, I'd seen Gary Vee doing his hustle with, I think it was baseball cards, or if it wasn't baseball, it was sports cards in general.
Yep.
I've seen all sorts, and now expanding to Pokemon cards. I mean, okay, so a lot of my audience don't know this, and I don't know if you know this, but I used to be a competitive Yu-Gi-Oh card player. Already you got me thinking, maybe I should look into the Yu-Gi-Oh side of this.
Yu-Gi-Oh's popping up right now. You can look right on eBay right now, like, you know, Blue Eyes is like the original, the secret rares. I used to actually collect quite a few Yu-Gi-Oh cards back in the days of Kin. I actually played Yu-Gi-Oh as well. And like the secret rare cards, even like the old school, like Barrel Dragon cards and so forth, they're worth a lot. I'm talking like thousands of dollars right now.
But you need mint condition, don't you? Not the stuff you've kept in boxes that are like torn out.
You need to be like slipped in mint condition. It needs to be great. That's I think that's the biggest thing that people don't really realize from this hustle is that it is a hassle. You're talking about long lead times right now. I mean, you can pay $80 to get it a little bit more expedited, where you get the card in like 3 weeks or a month. But usually it's like a 6 month wait. 4 to 6 month wait, it's still going to cost you about $40 a card. So, you know, when you're putting in, you know, tons of cards, for us, for example, we're about to send in a bunch of graded cards. It's going to cost us $13,000 out the gate cash.
Yeah, insanely. Is there ever a worry that, I don't know, the market tanks or the cards lose value, or suddenly the supply even gets there? Like, what are the risks involved? Your only edge can't be the fact that you've got the liquidity to hold this much supply.
So absolutely, right? Just like any really asset, I mean, even gold, right? you know, there is a value spike. So, you know, it's just like a commodity that you would trade, just like crypto or whatnot, right? There is a chart, but you can imagine that the ebb and flow of economics. So, it will go up in value and it also will go down in value based on what the current market is like. Now, based on the current like geopolitical landscape, you know, as you obviously know, you know, just things are becoming a little bit dicey across the world, right? You know, dollar, you know, the value of it has been going down. Just overall markets in general have been going down. So people are looking to hedge their funds into other hard assets out there, which is also the reason why real estate in America hasn't really crashed, is because people are looking to diversify into real estate. They're looking to diversify into anything. So Pokemon cards has been exploding up in value because Pokemon is the number one collectible item to date because it has more than Magic. So Magic Gathering has a core fan base, but Pokemon, the amount of volume and the amount of money that has pretty much flown through the market over the course of since inception, really 20 years, has been just astronomical. And the fact that they continue to release Pokemon games, cards, tournaments even, is the driving factor of success. Magic is, I mean, they release stuff, but not nearly to the effect that Pokemon has, even on the newer generation. So you have that connection from like the old generation, you know, our time, to, you know, some of the younger kids right now that are coming in. They're like, oh, wow, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's Pokemon. Who in the world doesn't know what Pokemon is? It's the most global brand I can think of, and makes sense that carries over into the card game. I mean, it's amazing how you manage to make a living off of so many things you're passionate about. I mean, I know it's not just the card games. I know you also have your own gaming mm-hmm. mouse company.
Yep. So I have a gaming mouse company called Noble Five. You know, we are finishing the final mice sales right now on Amazon. They're actually going pretty fast. We just like put the rest on Amazon because we didn't. The thing about technology is that, you know, technology moves very fast. So what we want to do is we always want to be forefront of technology. We always want to be able to produce an honest mice or honest product in general for a proper price. The whole premise of Noble 5 was that we were going to be noble about it, and we were going to offer products for a fair price, and it was essentially going to show people that, no, you can get the best mouse out there, the best specs out there. You can compete at a very high level in gaming without having to spend $150 on a mouse at Razer or whatever, you know? So at the moment right now, we're actually in development of our second mouse, a wireless edition that is going to be able to compete with the best wireless mouse out there for, once again, you know, probably at a 40-50% discount than the competition.
What allows you to do that? I mean, I've got a Razer, but now I'm thinking I should probably have a Noble 5.
I guess our relations with the manufacturer. So when we have these relations with, you know, China, India is one option that we were trying to go to. But the main manufacturer in China, Guangzhou, China, I've had a personal relationship for a long time now based on like some of the hustles that I've done in the past. I've sold products on Amazon. You know, I've sold other, you know, primary products, I guess, technology-wise. And so these guys were able to help me out. And because I've done business with them for so long now, they've been able to give me a pretty low MOQ to test out the product, as well as, you know, a good overall good price value per unit.
Man, that's the power of networking, isn't it? Like, you really, you don't need to be the most talented. You don't need to be the most intelligent. You don't need anything if you've got a good network. And I've found that in so many businesses I've been in. Like, if you've got the right network, everything else becomes very secondary. And that's like giving you, you're bringing out best specs of mice on the market with, can you say that plural of mice when it's mouse?
Mice is plural, right? And I think it's.
So that applies to the hardware as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So the best specs when it comes to mice. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Okay, so we've covered, man, there's so much to cover. We've now covered your luxury market hustle. We've covered the awesome Noble 5 mouse, which Noble 5 mouse. Yeah, let's go with mouse, which again is incredible. And to expand further, what else are you doing making money off of your passions? right now.
Yeah, outside the mice, outside the mouse, outside the mice.
Yeah, outside the luxury, awesome luxury market and the mice.
I have an esports team as well. So I have an esports team called Radiance, and Radiance is a an esports team created by Hai. For those of you that played League of Legends, Hai was Cloud9, which is one of the top teams in gaming in general. But like they came up on League of Legends. They play on the NA split, and they are the one of the premier teams for NA. And Hai was the not only was he the mid laner, which is a very top position in League of Legends for those that do play League of Legends. But he was also the team captain, and he was also responsible for the actual branding of Cloud9, which is a really interesting story. But yeah, so Hai was the mid laner. He has a very, very big impact in the esports scene. I mean, everybody, especially here in America, knows who he is if they're in gaming. And he created this team called Radiance. And about 7 months ago, he asked me to be on board as a brand, essentially manager, somebody who, you know, talks the talk when it comes to deal flow, to, you know, properly, you know, engage the company in proper deals when it comes to sponsorships as well as investments. And it's been really good. It's been really, really good. It's been a
roller coaster. So did you buy the team?
No, so I came in with sweat equity. Hai asked me. I have another incubator that I have invested in. It's called CEO. CEO does a lot of stuff with actually Dog, Crypto Dog, and so forth. Like with his new Betterment product, Better Minds.
I tried that the other day.
Yeah, so Better Minds is a I believe is a CEO project. I have to confirm that. Don't double check that. But I know that CEO has investments in that. But that incubator service is located in, or accelerator is located in Santa Monica, and then I have an investment in that accelerator, so that I went to a pvp.com event. Essentially, they were throwing an event for one of their ventures, and it was a venture called pvp.com, which is a great, you know, great name. Anyways, pvp.com invited Hai to be out there, and so Hai came with his entire team. Radiance competed at the event, and then I just happened to just be sitting right there, and I was like, hey man, like, you know, I'm a big fan, you know, I'm in, you know, I don't play anymore really, but I've kept up with you for a long time now, I'm a big fan. He was the nicest guy. He's like, hey, you want to take a photo, do you want to hang out and whatnot? I was like, that sounds good to me. So we ended up chatting all night, and he's like, so what do you do? And I was like, well, at that time I was primarily an investor as well as a trader in crypto. And I was talking to him, he goes, oh, I actually used to trade crypto just for like for fun, invest. You know, I got into BNB when BNB first, you know, launched out. He got into Link, got into a bunch of good coins early, and then he got out in 2018. So he pretty much out-traded all of us. So he, you know, so we talked about that. And then afterwards, when I launched Noble 5, I followed up with him and ended up doing some business with him. And then we grew our friendship from there.
And incredible. So again, just networked your way to owning a part of an esports team.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a good time. And actually right now we're doing a round for it, a pre-sale. Yeah.
Okay, well, if anyone wants to get in on the Radiance pre-sale, make sure to where can people do that if they want to get in?
So that one would be directly with me. We're doing a very, very small seed round. I'm actually vetting people out like crazy. I've actually turned down quite a bit of money because I just didn't want a VC style. I wanted a guy that's, you know, people that are going to – we're not asking for very much. It's retrospect, guys, so I'm not trying to flex here, but we're asking for $500,000 at a roughly $3 to $5 million valuation. And we're being very selective of who we ask, because it's not a lot of money for a company, especially a company as large as Radiance already. And we're just trying to get very strategic investors that can bring in a lot of value to the team.
That's incredible. I've noticed that a lot in the crypto space as well. Investors have to be strategic these days. It's almost like a privilege to be able to invest in a lot of these companies.
Absolutely. I think that's a key thing. I think a lot of people, I think the whole like VC model of just like investing, just invest, especially in upcoming fintech projects, like emerging fintech industries, even outside of esports, all the new fintech scenes that are coming up, is very important, because you need somebody to talk to that's outside of your gap, right? A lot of fintech projects come in and they're like coders, the developers, the guys that don't really have necessarily the business linguistics and so forth that need that help.
It's a direction the entire market seems to be taking. I mean, Pomp recently launched the fund that raised, I don't know, something ridiculous, like multiple millions in 24 hours. Insane, simply because people want an audience to come alongside an investment or some sort of high-level strategic consulting. And now, because of social media, they can get both. They can get people that can bring them their audience, strategically consult their product, and give them money. It's changing the whole field up. I mean, it was a Naval tweet, I think. Sorry if it wasn't Naval. But he said, we've created a better casino than Wall Street, and we're completely changing up the game with regards to that. And do you have any thoughts on where it's going to head from here?
Like I said, right, I think the whole VC model is going to shift. I think that people are going to, like you said, it's becoming a privilege to invest in the projects, especially good projects. Now, if you're investing in a project that doesn't really ask very many questions, but is you know, creating large amounts of liquidity, you might want to double check that. That's actually a very prime thing that I double check nowadays, especially if I'm doing any investments. But yes, I think that the model is shifting. I think that the overall baseline is increasing, where like you have to be able to show what you're actually worth. Your credentials come into a big play. And that's why I encourage everybody to really sort of develop a brand to themselves, who they are. And so because that creates that network effect that we talked about, right? Because no one is going to want to talk to me at an event or whatnot if I can't have something to talk about, if I'm not, you know, credible, if I don't have these things that, you know, I can essentially vibe with that person with. And that's why that's where I think that the industry is heading. I think that all these leaders in media and so forth are becoming more and more investors, right? You're seeing it with Gary Vee, for example. Came in as a marketing guy, came in as a wine guy and a marketing guy, and now all of a sudden VaynerMedia is doing massive investments in. VaynerMedia has done some huge investments recently, and on top of that, they're also doing, you know, hard asset acquiring and so forth. So it's shifting. Everything is shifting. He's becoming from a media, you know, conglomerate over to a hard investment over to, you know, potentially even like he was joking around becoming a bank eventually.
I believe that he's going to someday buy the New York Jets. I mean, it seems inevitable. He always talks about it. And he's been saying for a while, actually, I don't know how closely you follow Gary Vee, but he's always said, when the economy goes down the drain, I'm going to buy up the brands that aren't doing too well, and I'm going to bring them into 2020, which is basically the most important asset you can have is attention, online attention. It's one of the most important assets in the world. That comes back to what you were saying about personal branding. It's so important. I encourage anyone who's listening to the Market Meditations podcast right now, start a personal brand. You really don't have to do much. You just have to document your life. That's it. Be honest, transparent, consistent, and you can grow an audience. And your USP is the fact that you're you. There is no other you. So it just makes zero sense for everyone to not start a personal brand. I mean, even Tai Lopez, I don't know how closely you follow him. I know he recently has been starting to, again, buy up these companies that are going down at really low prices, and then just use your existing audience and knowledge of the new social media craze, which isn't even new, but it's still new because there's so much inefficiency in the market, so much money to be made.
You're 100% right. And I believe the way VaynerMedia, for example, works is that they ask for equity into the company, right? So that's how they chop in. So not only are they investing some, but on top of it, they're getting just sweat equity with their marketing standpoint. And because marketing is so expensive for companies, and they're able to drive massive volume and massive value into every company that you know is struggling to really make an impact. And you know, that's where the personal brand comes in.
What do you think is the best way to transition from building that audience? So once you've built the audience and you have that attention, how do you then transition to securing these sorts of equity deals with companies?
Events. Very, very much so events. So whenever I go to Asia, now I haven't been to Asia in a minute now. It's been over about a year now. I always end up going to every single event that I can when I'm over there, and I end up talking to almost everybody when I go over there. And it's getting to the point where I know most of the crypto scene, especially, let's just start with crypto, at these events. And I'm getting to the point where people are just like asking me for exposure. But then what I can do is that if I get offers for exposure, I'll turn it back on them and be like, look, you know, I mean, I don't really want to like just tweet something out, just to tweet something out. But what I can do is that, why don't you let me use my background, which is engineering, Six Sigma, you know, process and development, towards really telling you and showing you what your best way to allocate your budget is, to maximize your exposure, and to really like, you know, improve your product. And most of the time they will say yes to that. And when they do say yes to that, I'll simply, you know, immediately ask them for, you know, compensation. But then eventually I'll roll that out and be like, hey, instead of compensating me, because I don't necessarily need the compensation to live, why don't, you know, we talk about equity? And why don't we talk about potentially coming in as, you know, sweat equity or some sort of, you know, rev share or some sort of that. And that creates the trust factor, because then they go, oh, okay, well, you know, Nikos doesn't really, you know, care about the, you know, the $5,000 a month or whatnot. He actually wants to grow with us. And, you know, that's where we strike into a rev share sort of situation. And then the rev share sort of situation then expands to equity sort of situation. And it kind of just like bleeds into each other, for me at least.
I haven't been doing much of that at all, going to events and stuff. But up until recently, honestly, I didn't realize this, what we're talking about right now, the importance of the personal brand, how much power it has. I was just doing this as a little bit of a hobby. I thought it was cool to have, to share my trading journey, to get an audience, to give free advice. I mean, I learned to trade through the free materials online, and I wanted to do the same thing myself. And then translates into this. So big advice for me personally, and again, to listeners, go to events, talk to as many people as you can, learn from them. And the model you've just shared, like deliver value first. It comes to a point where it's beyond money, because I mean, dude, you've got so many hustles going on right now. The type of returns your luxury market is making, the money at some point's got to stop meaning that much. It gets to the point where you want to do what you like and work with genuine projects, and people detect that and build upon that. What about before you're at the point where you have enough money to have the luxury of being in such a position where you say no to deals?
That part is the hustle. So that is where, you know, you put your pride aside. I think the number one thing about people is that people are very prideful. So I see people even before, right? I talked to a lot of influencers and so forth that will turn down, that don't necessarily even have capital at all. Like these guys, you know, are just standard guys that don't have capital. They essentially just do marketing influencing day in, day out. And they'll turn down $250 tweets instead of being paid $250. Sorry, instead of being paid $300, they'll be offered $200 or even $250, and they'll turn them down because of it. It's like, oh, you know, my brand is valued so much more. But I look at them, I go, well, yeah, man, I get that. But at the same time, you don't necessarily have the luxury to turn it down. And on top of it, now that company is turned off by you because you are not willing to be flexible or not willing to negotiate on a bigger scale. I mean, you can say, hey, I want $200 is fine, but I want to lock it in for 10 tweets, you know, like something like that is a little bit more credible. But I see a lot of these guys just have these huge, huge egos and don't respect that, you know, a dollar's a dollar, and don't appreciate it, and end up getting caught. So I guess my advice would be to take what you can get, as much as you can get on it, and build yourself up. And when you get to the point where, you know, you're the size of, you know, somebody credible, then you can start being a little bit more picky. But do not be picky at the start. Take what you can get. Hustle as much as you can. There is no wrong hustle. Now, a lot of people, you know, call people scams. A lot of people call this and that. I personally don't. I think a hustle is a hustle. And it's up to you to create that hustle.
I can also respect the hustle. I personally, I grew up watching a lot of anime. So I have a strong, like, you know, main character moral code in my head, which I just keep going. And the rule I go for, which is another binary filter type rule, is if I am having a net positive effect, I'm okay doing this. if it's not, which some hustles do, and I get some people, they're like, okay, this, I got to choose me or other people, and I'm going to choose me. I get that, and I can respect it. Personally, I really have that, like, it's got to have a net positive effect, because that's also selfish. It's not because I'm like some, think I'm some sort of hero or incredible main character. No, it's because I think long-term that is the best selfish way, because you gain the most out of it, as long as you make sure you keep giving more than you take everywhere you go. So it's a decent mindset to have. And now that we've zoomed out a bit, I want to dissect into your mindset with regards to these. How do you choose a venture to do? Because you're at the point where it's about saying no to things. And even if you want to take a step back before that, what makes you say, yes, I'm going to do this with my time, or no, I'm not going to do that with my time?
First off, if I ever do any venture, the first thing I like to do is I like to have a face-to-face with that person. Not so much over the call. Unfortunately, COVID has made that impossible, really, to meet people in person. But before, it was always meeting people in person and asking them very, very specific questions. So for me, I mean, this is one of my biggest strong suits. Now, this is something that you can learn, but it's like sort of just, it's just something that I have acquired over the years. I'm very, very good at reading people, just reading their thoughts, their body language. Like, I've done a lot of research on extensive ways to read people and how they react to the questions that I ask, everything from, you know, pupil dilations to everything. And I use that to my advantage, because the one thing I want to do is I want to vet, you know, how, you know, good is this guy? You know, is this guy full of shit? Is this guy like actually credible? And then if I take it from there, what I'll do next is I'll look at the overall valuation of the company, and I'll see how much intrinsic value does this company have. And based on that too, I can also kind of take away what kind of person created this company, right? If you're all of a sudden your evaluation is this high and this is what you kind of stick at and you don't really want to budge, then to me, not only does it tell me that your company is highly overvalued, but also tells me that you as a person and you as any future project that you deal with, you have this mindset that you are bigger than who you are. And that's a turnoff to me. I won't mess around with that. So that's, you know, that's the one thing, right? So it's in-person meeting, seeing their body language, seeing their psychology, seeing what their company provides. You know, do they fit an actual use case that is actually necessary out there? Now, that's why the biggest issue with crypto projects is a lot of crypto projects come in and they're filling use cases that no one asked them to fill. It's like, you know, like that's why in for example, 2017 with like projects like Shipchain, for example, that completely tanked. I was like, why do we need this? We don't need this project. Like, we don't need, you know, blockchain specifically for chips. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. So that's the next thing, you know, does this use case actually fit in? And then the biggest thing is the one question I always ask the new CEOs is, what is your 1, 3, 5 year plan? And how are you going to exit at those 3 points in every single scenario? So that's the number one thing I always ask them. And seeing how they respond to that is also a massive, massive plus or minus for me.
That's a really thorough and thought out process. How would someone learn more about how to read people? Like, what resources are there?
So this is something that I was infatuated with when I was a kid. I started doing this when I was 16, is when I read my first psychoanalyst type of books in the library, actually. I just went to a library and I just like sat down one day. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to teach myself how to read people. It's just like one thing that I just like kind of learned. I just read and read and did extensive research over the course of 4 years, where, you know, it just has helped me immensely especially when it comes to business.
Is there any one standout book or resource you'd really recommend our listeners check out if they want to learn more about that?
Yeah, I'll have to send it to you on this book. I don't know the name of the book, but there is a book by, I think the guy's name is Kirchhoff. Back in the day, old school book that it was actually, now this is, I know it's going to spook your audience out, but it's actually a torture, it's actually like like the psychology behind torture and that, I know it's going to freak your audience. I'm sorry for bringing this in, but psychology behind torture and what exactly does it take to break a person? And it's not necessarily, it's just the overall feel on what it takes to break a person and what it's going to take to make sure that they have everything they need. And how you can essentially twist their, I guess like not just physically, but twist their emotions to making them crack. I guess, I don't know. It's a whole thing.
Honestly, it doesn't shock me at all. I take the approach to these things very logically. I mean, the way I see it is in a torture situation, you are literally taking someone to one of the furthest extremes of emotion you could ever possibly take them. And I mean, extremities are a good place to learn. I mean, everything comes to light there. So I'm personally fascinated, and I'll make sure to link that video, that book in the description to this, because I'm going to check it out. I love your process. I love how you have a very thought out process. When I asked that question, I saw your face light up a little bit as you spoke about the body language stuff. I think that's something you're very passionate about. That's got to help with dating as well. Just coming, it's the first thing that comes to my head.
Yeah, it actually, it does for me quite a bit. I can tell sort of, you know, whether or not, I'm pretty good at telling whether someone's lying or not. And so like, you know, when it comes to dating, I'll be like, hey, you know, like, you know, how many guys are you seeing right now? Stuff like that. Right. All these questions that I guess you have to answer, you have to ask. And I'll be able to really tell, you know, whether who that you know, if that person is. And for me, I think the biggest thing was recently, this Japanese girl that I was seeing, she asked me about like a little bit more into like what I do and so forth. And actually, I was talking to her about the body language stuff. And she was like, you can tell my body language. And I go, yeah, you know, for example, I asked you, for example, I told you a few times that, you know, you looked beautiful tonight and so forth, and I saw your pupils dilate in and out. And what that tells me is that it not just dilate out, but dilate in and out. So they're pulsing. And what that tells me is that you want to believe what I'm saying, but at the same time, you think that I'm also full of shit and that you don't want to trust anybody. And it like right on the spot, hammer on the nail. It was absolutely, you know, she was like, oh my God, like, I can't believe you just like, you hit that. And then like, we dove deeper into it. And she asked me a couple more questions about her body language and so forth. And, every single one of my answers was actually like dead on, spot on. And she was just like, holy shit. Like, I'm a little bit scared about this, but at the same time, this is like so interesting, but I'm a little bit like terrified about this, which I guess is terrifying, you know, when you can, you know, really read somebody, but at the same time, this is, you know, this is not like a superpower. Anybody can really just kind of learn about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I'm absolutely fascinated and definitely want to look into it more. Mm-hmm. I mean, I looked into it at one point where there was this film about, it was a TV series. You may have seen it if you love body language, a guy who can read people's facial expressions really well. And he's like a detective. And after watching that, I tried it a little bit. I can't say I had that much success, except one thing that really helped me was personally when someone folds their arms during a conversation, immediately picking up some sort of defensive vibe. I don't know if that's accurate, but that's something which I've noticed. Like whenever I say a topic I really shouldn't have, especially in a business setting, the guy folds their arms. I notice it and I immediately like draw back and try play off of that. A lot of it's subconscious as well. But yeah, a really fascinating topic to kind of wrap this podcast up on.
Something a little different.
Really different. I think people are really going to enjoy hearing about that. So Z, we have any last comments you would like to leave our listeners with? You have been an amazing guest. Fascinating. I mean, if we were going to talk about all your ventures, we could keep going for another 5 hours, I'm sure. Is there anything you'd like to leave our audience here with? Any cool projects you're working on that you'd like to share with us before we finish this?
Yeah. So first off, you know, in terms of projects, I think the number one baby that I've been focusing on is going to be this luxury sort of a crypto business. You know, people don't realize that Pokemon cards, watches, fine watches and so forth, they do the same exact thing as crypto. Now, crypto, you can send, you know, a transaction, you send a large sum of money across borders for a very low fee, you know, so pretty much seamlessly and essentially untrackable, right? Essentially. Now, with crypto and Pokemon cards, I mean, sorry, with watches and Pokemon cards, it's the same exact thing. If I were to go to, let's just say, Asia and I bring $200,000 worth of watches or $200,000 worth of Pokemon cards and I have a seller over there, it's all face value, right? There is no, essentially, there is no true value behind the product that I'm selling. So, you know, that's where that being able to do cross-border transactions for cash and so forth is so valuable. And now what you want to do with your paperwork is up to you, of course, but you have that option. And I think that that's where people really forget about why watches like Rolexes and so forth are so valuable and why they're so sought out by, you know, wealthy individuals. Same with Pokemon cards now coming up. Now, in terms of just like overall advice, my advice to, I guess, the audience would be, especially if you're new coming up into the investment space, into the trading space, trading, I would try every single strategy possible and something that fits to you. Alpha, you want to call it alpha, takes a while to develop. Now, for me, it's taken, you know, a good solid 4 years now of nonstop trading, you know, just days and days and days and days with some of the smartest people that are way smarter than me, and learning from them to develop my own form of trading and my own form of profitability. That's just my experience. And I would not, one, be too hasty and be too impatient on trading. And two, I would just consistently try, even if it doesn't work out, continuously try. The best thing you can do is follow through with your TA and don't let other people influence you, right? If you have a set goal and you have a set chart and you want to follow through with it, follow through with it, whether you're right or wrong. Just be ready to take the hit and follow through with your TA and see where it leads you, because that's the only way you're going to be able to learn, right? You can, I mean, everybody can tell you, oh, you know, tie your shoes, you're going to trip. But it's you actually tripping one time to for you to really realize how important, you know, tying your shoes are. And I guess on the investment standpoint, be very, very, very careful who you trust your money to, right? Do your due diligence on it. Don't just FOMO into a project just because of, you know, who's behind it. Do your research on it and take your time on investing. Everybody always, you understand, like the person that's asking for the funds is a salesperson. And that salesperson is always going to try to upsell the project. It's always going to tell you how incredible it is. It's always going to tell you how much worth it is, how much multiplier it could be. Don't fall for that. That's car salesman lingo. Take it one step at a time. Do your own research and then, you know, execute.
Z, that was, I don't know, 2 minutes of straight amazing advice. We went from training to investing.
It's not my first rodeo.
Dude, amazing. And I'd love to have you on the podcast again in the future. There's so many more topics we can cover. Thank you so much for coming on, sharing such incredible advice. You truly are a very talented, genuine person, and it comes across really well. Thank you for joining us.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Market Meditations podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like us to continue bringing you fascinating people from across the world, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen to these podcasts, and share the episode with a friend. If you have feedback or an idea for a potential guest, reach out to me on Twitter at KarushAK, and do not forget we write a newsletter covering all important topics in crypto and traditional markets. We send it out 3 times a week, the Market Meditations newsletter. You also get early access to these episodes and you get transcripts and extra notes as well. So make sure to subscribe there as well.